listen to the Parents Show on Radio Verum 92.6 FM.
Neave Solicitors are proud to sponsor the Parents Show. The friendly team at Neave's includes specialists who can guide you through all the legal ups and downs of family life. Visit neavesolicitors.co.uk. Neave Solicitors, your complete legal solution.
Welcome to the Parents Show on Radio Verulam 92.6 FM. I'm Lydia Elcoury, and Georgie Tavelle will be joining me co-presenting in just a few minutes. Now, tonight's show is all about sleep, and it's an issue I think touches nearly everybody at some stage, you know, in your child's lives. And it's probably the most frequent problem we do have to contend with. Now, maybe your child needs less sleep than others, or maybe your child has a different sleeping pattern, or are they just excuses that we're making up for not cracking down and getting our children to sleep properly? Now, we've gathered the best experts we could find to give you the most relevant information for you to figure out your own situation, because every child is different and everybody's got different needs. First up, we'll be talking to Jodie Mindell. She's the Associate Director of the Sleep Centre at the Children's Hospital of Philadelphia and author of Sleeping Through the Night, How Infants, Toddlers and Their Parents Can Get a Good Night's Sleep. Then we'll be talking to Pam Clark for more specific child advice and examples from your questions, and she's from the Child Sleep Company. And then last up, we'll be talking to Jo Swindells, who's a local mum of two and who had some sleep issues with her children and who has now found some solutions. So stay tuned. We've got lots of helpful advice for any issues that you might have encountered related to sleep with your children. We'll be talking to Jodie Mindell in just a minute.
Radio Verulam Community Partners.
Hertfordshire Chorus is one of the finest large choirs in the country, performing at the top venues throughout the UK and regularly touring abroad. This nationally acclaimed choir is here on your doorstep. They rehearse every Wednesday in Hatfield and are always happy to welcome new singers. So if you're looking to join a top-class choir, then go along to any rehearsal. If you're not a singer but enjoy listening to good music, why not go along to one of the concerts? Details are on the website, which is hertfordshirechorus.org.uk.
For more on Radio Verulam Community Partners, go to radioverulam.com/community partners.
Community radio at its best. Radio Verulam in West Harts.
Welcome back to the Parents Show on Radio Verulam 92.6 FM. Now, as I promised you, tonight's show is all dedicated to sleep and how basically we can get a good night's sleep for us, for our infants, toddlers, and how to get a good quality of life from it. Now, as I promised, first up we'll be speaking to Jodie Mindell, who is the Associate Director of the Sleep Centre at the Children's Hospital of Philadelphia, and she's also the author of Sleeping Through the Night, How Infants, Toddlers and Their Parents Can Get a Good Night's Sleep. Jodie, thanks for joining us this evening.
Oh, it's great to be here.
You're going to give us all the answers to all our problems, Jodie, isn't that right?
Absolutely. I'm going to give you the gift of a good night's sleep.
That's nothing better than that. But really, when it comes down to it, sleep, getting the sleep balance right, getting children's food right, and if they need a nappy change, they're the three most important things to getting a happy child, I guess.
Absolutely, and being well-loved, of course.
Yeah,
hugs and kisses are really good, but, you know, from at least my point of view, a good night's sleep and getting a good nap are going to make a huge difference in how everyone does.
Now, can you tell us, how much sleep do children need in general at various stages in their life? Because obviously, you know, my 2-year-old will sleep 13 hours, my 4-year-old, not a hope. I mean, they need different amounts at different times, don't they?
Exactly. So when you first have the baby and they're a newborn, there's huge individual differences. And so some newborns at, you know, 2 weeks, 4 weeks are sleeping 10 hours a day, and some are sleeping as much as 18 hours a day. And you have to understand that there's big differences across children. Then when you get to infants, so infants are 3 to 12-month-olds, they are sleeping anywhere from about 14 to 15 hours a day. But again, there's some who are more and there's some who are less. So then you move on to what we call toddlers. Toddlers are 1-year-olds to 3-year-olds, and they're sleeping about 12 to 14 hours. And it's important to understand that toddlers are right at that time where they're starting to switch from taking 2 naps a day to 1 nap a day. So you may see that when your toddler changes to just 1 afternoon nap, they may get a little less sleep overall, but that's okay. And then when you get into the preschool years, so 3 to 5 years before they, you know, they may be starting in a preschool program, they're sleeping about 11 to 12 hours. And in the UK and here in the United States, most children are giving up napping by somewhere between 3 and 5 years of age. Then we can move on to older.
By all means, yeah, absolutely.
Okay,
please.
So school-age children. So children who are in school, they need a lot more sleep than most of us realize. They really need about 10 to 11 hours of sleep at night. So that's a great deal of sleep. And they've got very busy days. You know, they're typically not napping. They're going strong in school, and a lot of them are doing things after school. So again, 10 to 11 hours. And then we move into the teenagers. And the teenagers also need more sleep than we realize. And teenagers need somewhere between 8.5 and 9.5 hours of sleep. But it's very hard for them to get. Most are not getting that amount of sleep. They're typically staying up later. Their internal clocks, their body clocks, make it so they stay up late. And at least, especially here in the United States, but I also know in many, many other countries, you know, school starts so early for the teenagers when they're in those upper grades.
Absolutely. And I mean, it's something that we're hearing about more and more, that teenagers just aren't getting enough sleep. And I suppose with social networking and everything, it is pushing sleep down to a minimum.
Yeah, it's really contributing. So it was bad enough before when, you know, they're sort of liking to stay up and they have these internal clocks. And what we know about teenagers, which is very interesting, is that their internal clock, so what time you feel sleepy at night, shifts about 2 hours after puberty. So if you take a whole bunch of 13-year-olds, and you know those 13-year-olds where some of them look like they're 18, you know, and they could, like, you know, pass for, you know, being much older, and then some of them still look like they're 10. Well, if you take those kids, they all are in the same school system, they all have the same amount of homework. Those kids who look like they're much older, they are going to sleep about 2 hours later, and their hormone, melatonin, which is a naturally produced hormone, gets secreted about 2 hours later than those 13-year-olds who still look like they're young. So there's something about puberty that really shifts that clock much later. So they're already at a disadvantage that they're getting shifted later, and then again, high schools are starting, or upper schools are starting, so early in the morning that there's just not enough hours. And then you add to it all the electronic media and all the Facebook and all the things the kids are doing and being texting, and they just are up all night and not getting the sleep they need.
It's actually shifting everything in the wrong direction to what they want. I mean, if they're starting early, but yet their clock is moving in the wrong direction to the way their lifestyle is probably going.
Exactly. So biologically, they're already in trouble. And then you add on to it everything else that's happening. And, you know, the TV shows are on late and everything that they're doing.
Yeah. Now, Jody, can I ask you, quite often I hear from parents, you know, friends and friends of friends, that, you know, if they're the kind of children if they have children who start early in the morning, who start at like 4 or 5 o'clock in the morning, I often hear them saying, my child just doesn't need that much sleep. What do you say? Does that kind of thing actually exist? Is that true?
Well, yeah. I mean, as I said, there is, you know, really big differences across kids where some kids need less sleep than other kids. We haven't done the research as much in children as in adults. In adults, it's very interesting. So we need you and I, we and all the adults out there listening, we all need a little bit over 8 hours of sleep. So if we were to put all of us into a sleep lab and, you know, take away all the pressures of work and everything, we would all move to 8 hours of sleep. But research has shown that it's not that there's differences in how much sleep an adult needs, but how well they tolerate not getting enough sleep. So I need my 8 hours of sleep, and I get it every night or I'm a mess, where other people can, what they say, get by on 6 hours of sleep. You know, that's probably a bit true with kids, too, that there's some kids who need less sleep. And there's no question what you brought up about, you know, we call them owls and larks. Owls are the kids who are getting their second wind, 9, 10 o'clock at night. That's when they feel most energetic. And then there's the larks, who are the early birds. They're getting up at 4 or 5 in the morning, and they're raring to go. It's very hard to change that tendency of being an owl or a lark. So a lot of it's sort of figuring out when you should go to bed, if based on what time you're probably going to be getting up in the morning.
Right. Great. Well, that's really interesting. And now, can I ask you, what's the impact of lack of sleep on children's development? I mean, behavior, learning, and their cognitive development.
Right. So we know sleep affects so many things. If you don't get enough sleep, first of all, it affects mood. right? So you're cranky, you're irritable, kids are cranky and irritable, teens are moody. It also affects, in mood, it affects how well you can regulate your emotions. So if you haven't gotten enough sleep, you're going to get frustrated much faster. You're going to burst out into tears much faster. You're going to get angry much faster. And you know when you're at a place where you, you know, it's a very serious place, such as a funeral, and you start laughing and you can't stop? It's usually related to not getting enough sleep. So
really?
It also affects cognitive ability, so how well you think. So memory and attention and problem solving and all those things kids need to do in school every day. And it doesn't even have to be school. You know, an 18-month-old, a toddler, needs to be able to pay attention and to problem solve and to learn. It's all about learning. And there's been these great studies showing that even if you take away like a half hour of sleep in a second or third grader, you know, an 8 or 9 year old, that those kids don't do as well in school. There's a half hour difference.
Just as little as 30 minutes.
Yes, 30
That's
minutes.
Amazing.
And these great studies were done where they had teachers rate the kids, and the teachers had no idea whether or not the kids were getting more sleep or less sleep the night before, and there was huge differences. Just 30 minutes can make a big difference.
That's
in how
amazing.
A child learns
That's
in school. Then, you know, there's also things like health. Right? So we know without a doubt, all of our grandparents told us that if you don't get enough sleep, you're more likely to get colds and flus, and that's really starting to show. Obesity, which is a real concern these days, that's definitely associated with not getting enough sleep. So for our kids' health, we also want them to get enough sleep.
And I can't get over the fact that we're talking about it can be as little as 30 minutes that makes a difference. That's amazing.
Right, so we're not talking about, you know, trying to get your child who goes to bed at 10 and now you're trying to get him to bed at 7. You know, if you can get him to bed at 9:30, or which I still think is very late, that's going to make a big difference in how they do the next day, even something that small. And that's been repeated by a number of studies showing that even 30 minutes will make a difference.
Wow. That's interesting. And what about behavior? I mean, you mentioned you're quicker to cry. What about less pleasant behavior?
Right. So we do know that especially young children, when they don't get enough sleep, you know, they're less likely to listen, to pay attention. They may look overactive. So a lot of kids, we call it overtired. You know, a child gets overtired, they're running around the room. They're not, you know, sort of look, you know, child doesn't go curl up on the couch when they're young. They're more likely to be aggressive and hit other kids. And older kids and teenagers, we know it's without a doubt associated with risk-taking behavior. You know, they're already doing sometimes things that are stupid. If they're not getting enough sleep, they're going to be even more stupid. So, you know, we really want to have them thinking clearly, and especially at a time when they're starting to do things like drive.
Yeah, of course. You need all your faculties working 100%. And how can you tell? I mean, obviously, I look at my son and I can tell he hasn't had enough sleep because he's got bags under his eyes and he's grumpy. But I mean, are there more subtle things that we can pick up on that show that your child isn't getting enough sleep? Something like maybe your child has been constantly not getting enough sleep for years and you've just gotten used to it, you know, and you just kind of turn to accept it. I mean, are there things, more subtle things that we could be looking for?
Well, I think one thing, it's a very simple thing for parents to pay attention to, is whether or not you have to wake your child in the morning.
Okay.
So if you have to wake somebody in the morning, and whether it's an alarm clock or you go in and have to wake your child up, whether it's that, you know, it's for daycare or for school, that is an absolute number one sign your child's not getting enough sleep. That's a given. So if you're still sleeping, it means you need more sleep. So you can just think about, do you have to wake your child in the morning? Easiest thing to do. Other things to do is to look at your child's behavior. And, you know, those rare nights when they do get enough sleep, are they different? So is your child calmer? Are they less cranky? Are they able to pay attention better in school? Are they just happier to be around? It can make a big difference. And so you can use that as a sign. You know, we do look for things like when kids have, you know, major behavior problems, what they were worried about, something like sleep. Usually it's a piece of it, maybe not the whole thing, but more sleep is going to help. With little kids, very little ones, you know, especially 3, 4, 5 year olds, especially if your child has outgrown a nap, if every time you're in the car they fall asleep, that's a sign they're not getting enough sleep. So you want to look for, do they fall asleep at times when you wouldn't want them to, or they should be awake in the morning? And you want to look at their behavior and look at, are they different on those nights that they get enough sleep?
That's really helpful and constructive advice. And if anybody's listening out there, is there any harm in just trying it out? Put your kid to bed 30 minutes earlier. Just try it for a few nights. Just see if there's a difference. Even if you think they are going to bed at a reasonable hour, would you recommend trying it out?
Oh, absolutely. And so if it's a young child, that's easy to do. So especially the little ones who can't tell time, how do they know the difference that it's a half hour earlier?
Yeah.
So
yeah.
There you can do it. Even with teenagers, one of the things to do is to get them to become part of it. So we usually set it up as an experiment. So, if you say to them, I want you to go to bed an hour earlier, for your life, they're going to never do it. But
yeah.
If I say to them, give me 2 weeks, just 2 weeks, let's do an experiment. Let's have you go to bed at 10 o'clock instead of at midnight or at 11. Let's just do an experiment, see how you feel, and then we'll talk about it. And what you usually find is that they feel much better. And so it can make a big difference. They may not stay at that 10 o'clock bedtime, but at least they're going to be more likely to do it. So you're right that just trying it as an experiment for a short time is going to give you a lot of information. Now, if you put your child to bed half hour earlier, an hour earlier, and now they're having a hard time falling asleep, it means that their old bedtime was probably more appropriate for them.
Great. Now, Jodie, just a couple more questions. What are some of the things that can impact on whether a child gets enough sleep? What things should we be looking out for?
So first we have what we just call good sleep habits. So going to bed the same time every night, it sets that internal clock. You should try to go to bed same time every night. It can be an hour later on weekends, but around the same time. Having a bedtime routine. We think about bedtime routines as being for babies, but it's not. It's for every age, is that you want some wind-down time. And, doing some, going to get ready, brushing your teeth, maybe setting your alarm clock. For a child, reading as part of a bedtime routine is just a wonderful thing in terms of helping them with literacy, but also helping them have really nice time with their parents. Even teenagers, getting them to have a bedtime routine that they don't just go from homework to turning out the light. Other things, one of my major pet peeves is electronics in the bedroom.
Yeah.
That can make the world of difference. So if we could get every parent to throw the television out of their bedroom, and their own too, and their kids, it would make a big difference. Putting all cell phones, having a family policy that all cell phones sit on the kitchen counter and get charged overnight. Getting rid of those video games, getting rid of, all those electronics. Study after study after study has shown what a difference that makes. And you can't imagine how many, 3-year-olds are having electronics in their bedrooms. And then I think the last one, we have a whole bunch of them, but another one is caffeine. Caffeine is slipping into more and more and more things. And parents have to be really good sleuths to look at what is their child having during the day that's going to have caffeine in it. And so things like iced teas and the energy drinks, a lot of them have a lot of caffeine, and it's going to make it so your child can't fall asleep at night and have a hard time sleeping.
But it's kind of astonishing because, as I said, I've got a 2- and a 4-year-old, to think of caffeine even being part of the conversation. But of course it is, and it becomes, even chocolate, I suppose, has caffeine in it, and that's bound to impact on the children.
Exactly. Well, and I can't tell you how many times I'll be in a grocery store and I see a parent buying, a Coke or a Mountain Dew for a 3-year-old. What are you doing?
Yeah.
There's
yeah.
no reason for them to have it. They shouldn't be having it. There's all that sugar in there. It's just bad for many, many reasons. Now, good news about chocolate. So luckily, kids typically like milk chocolate better than dark chocolate. Milk chocolate doesn't really have that much caffeine in it.
Oh,
it has
right.
very low amounts. Dark chocolate has a lot. It's a big difference. And so, if your child has a little bit of milk chocolate or has hot chocolate in the evening, it should not really have an effect on them.
Okay. Well, that's good to know. It's nice to know that you can give a couple of treats. Coke and Mountain Dew or any of those kind of fizzies for kids, iced tea, it just seems, why would you bother?
Right. Those shouldn't be at all in the equation. But, having chocolate chip cookies in the evening is a wonderful thing for families, and it's fine.
Great. And one last question, Jodie, before we let you go. Is there ever a case when you can accept your child sleeping too little? Is there any justification?
I would say no.
Right.
I would have to say that I think sleep has to be a priority. You know, the most important thing that our children are doing every single day is learning. That their job is learning. Whether or not they're a nine-month-old or they're in school, learning is their job. And the big contributor to helping someone learn is getting enough sleep. So I think in every way, we really want to make sure that our kids are getting enough sleep.
Great stuff. Jody, thank you so much. And just to mention your book again, it's Sleeping Through the Night, How Infants, Toddlers and Their Parents Can Get a Good Night's Sleep.
Thank you so much for having me.
Oh, pleasure, Jody. Thanks a million for all your help and advice. All the best. Welcome back to The Parents Show on Radio Verulam 92.6 FM. Thank you very much to Jody Mindell from the Sleep Centre at the Children's Hospital of Philadelphia for her advice. Now we're going to move on to even more advice about sleep. We've got Pam Clark in the studio with us now, and she's from the Child Sleep Company. Thank you very much for joining us, Pam.
It's my pleasure, Lydia. Thank you for having me.
And Georgie Tavella is co-presenting with me this evening. Georgie, how are you?
Oh, good. Thanks, Lydia. How are you doing?
Scribbling lots of notes about how to get your kids to sleep.
You know what sleep is my kids are. I need all the help I can get.
Great. Well, Pam, thank you so much for joining us. We've heard a lot about you. You're local to St Albans and you work in this area helping parents give their children the gift of sleep. Can we say that?
Absolutely. In fact, it's giving the whole family the gift of sleep, because as Jodie was saying, you know, sleep deprivation makes such a big difference to the whole family. It's crucial for little ones to get great sleep, and it's vital for their parents as well. So that is the wonderful job that I love to do.
Great stuff. And successfully. We'll be talking to Jo Swindells in just a while, and she was one of your clients.
That's right, yes.
And I'm just thinking, is clients the right word? And we'll talk to her about more her constructive, you know, experience of your consultancy. So tell us, what's your top advice about getting kids to sleep and getting children to have enough sleep?
I think one of the myths about children and sleep is this idea that if you keep your child up later at night, they're going to sleep better. And Jodie alluded to it earlier on. Overtiredness is such a big issue for kids. The irony of overtiredness is that it actually makes it harder for a child to get to sleep. It makes them sleep worse during the night, and it makes them more likely to wake early as well. So you have this awful cycle of, you know, you put your child to bed later and they sleep worse and they're rattier the next day as a result, and the whole cycle just gets worse and worse. So if you take one thing away from this, absolutely, Jodie's point about putting your child to bed 30 minutes earlier, I completely back that up.
Do it regardless. Across the board, there's no harm in it. Just try it.
Absolutely. If you are concerned your child is not getting enough sleep, then that is the first thing that I would start to do. Beyond that, then the main thing to think about is what I call a child's sleep props. And I use this term to refer to something that a child needs to help them get to sleep, but which they don't control. So for younger children, it could be something like a dummy, or it could be that you have to rock them to sleep or feed them to sleep, or even that you just need to be present in the room with them. The problem this creates is when a child then comes into light sleep several times during the night, the chances are quite high that they will then look for that prop again. And of course, that means they're then crying out for you to come back and do whatever it was that you did at bedtime. So that would be the next piece of advice. Understand your child's sleep props and start to think about weaning them off those so that they can learn to settle themselves to sleep independently.
And do children wake during the night every night? Do they all wake up during the night?
We all do. Adults do as well. Sleep is a cyclical process, so we go between light and deep sleep throughout the night. About every 45 minutes is the cycle. And as a result of that, actually a very brief wakening during the night is entirely normal, but adults are completely oblivious to it because we just resettle back down to sleep. You know, we get comfy, we move the duvet, and then we go back off to sleep. And children, the only reason it's a problem is if they don't know how to self-settle.
Can I ask you that, going back to the self props and then self-settling afterwards, is there ever a need for them? Would you ever recommend to parents to use a dummy or to rock, or is it an age-appropriate thing, or would you rather avoid it from the beginning?
Age is very important. When you have a newborn, life's pretty crazy anyway, as we all know.
That's one way to describe it.
At that time, dummies are very helpful. Obviously, the SIDS guidance at the moment is that a dummy can be useful if your child will take it. And, you know, tiny babies can't necessarily self-settle from day one. There's a lot of personality in it. To be honest, some children are naturally good sleepers and some less so. And those that are less good sleepers might need more props in the early days. But generally, from about 5 or 6 months of age, children are developmentally ready to learn the skills. So even if you haven't had much success before that point, all children can learn the skills then. And then it's a case of taking away the props and helping them to learn to do it without needing those props.
Okay, so to breastfeed through the night, which is what most people are doing early days anyway, because babies need it. So you say up to 5 or 6 months, and I guess that's when habits settle in as well. Is that right?
Yes, again, it's quite specific to the child.
Yeah.
And it's not one of the myths that I want to bust, really. You know, breastfeeding and independent sleep habits are not mutually exclusive. You know, they can absolutely go hand in hand, and there are some things that you can do to make it easier for the two to coexist. And I also have a strong view that that breastfeeding is far easier as a mum if you've actually had a decent sleep, so a better rest. So so you know, all those kind of things. I suppose they're more common when a child is very, very tiny, but as they get older and are on a decent amount of solid foods, I guess that's the point where you should start to think, if your child hasn't already slipped into good habits, of starting to work on it.
Can you give us an example of a bad habit with breastfeeding? And
The biggest issue with actually feeding of any kind, it doesn't have to be breastfeeding, it can be bottle feeding as well, because the sucking motion is so soothing for a tiny baby, it's very common for a little baby to fall asleep on a feed. And that's absolutely fine when they're tiny. It happens the vast majority of the time. As your child gets older, it's helpful if you try to dissociate feeding and sleeping. So, for example, if you try to feed your child when they wake from a nap rather than when they're ready to go down for a nap, they're likely to be more alert and awake and take a really good full feed and not then doze off on the feed, whether it's a bottle, whether it's a breastfeed. And then they can learn to settle themselves down for the nap without needing that prop. So that's how, you know, for very young babies, that's how I would address that issue. You may know the baby whisperer. Tracy Hogg talks about the eat, activity, sleep approach. It's that kind of approach that I'm talking about, where you're trying to separate the feeding and the sleeping.
It makes so much sense. It really makes so much sense. Now, we've got a bunch of questions from listeners who have sent them in.
Maybe I could start with the first one, which is appropriate because we're talking about breastfeeding and sleeping. But so the Lalesh League and those that follow attachment parenting propose that co-sleeping and breastfeeding on demand, which could also be interpreted as throughout the night as well, and I'm not always sure as to what age, but that it's preferable for the emotional well-being of babies and even toddlers. In your opinion, what do you think, that how does this affect the long-term sleep patterns of babies?
Well, as we mentioned before, some of it comes down to the individual child and some of it comes down to the individual family. And I think if a family has made a choice that they want to co-sleep for a period of time, that's absolutely great, as long as everyone buys into it and for as long as they are happy with that. I think where it starts to become an issue is if the family aren't getting enough sleep. So the child is overtired, the parents are overtired, or mum and dad decide that they've had enough of it. And I think at that point, that's the time to make the change. Typically, people that have opted into co-sleeping by choice are very happy to continue to do so until the point where their child is ready to move into their own separate bed. What tends to be more common, and the people that I see as my clients, are those that aren't necessarily co-sleeping by choice, but are co-sleeping because it just seemed like the easiest thing to do at the time. And yes. Therefore, it's now become a problem because mum and dad haven't shared a bed for months, and dad's getting a bit hacked off with that. And the child is now waking regularly during the night when mum thinks, well, actually, you're eating plenty of solid food in the day. You don't really need all these feeds. Yeah. And so that's when it becomes a problem. And that's where I'm more than happy to step in and help. But that's more where co-sleeping has almost been forced on the family without them necessarily opting into it.
Yeah, and there are a few people that I know as well who chose co-sleeping, but then actually after a while realised, you know, after a year and a half or 2 years, that they were utterly exhausted. Mm. And I actually did read Jean Liddulph's book, Three in a Bed, but then she doesn't talk about four in a bed when another baby comes along.
And that is so often a key point for a family. They may be very happy to co-sleep, and then all of a sudden mum's expecting another baby, and they just can't imagine how they're going to cope with a newborn and a toddler and all of them in this same bed. And all of a sudden there's some pressure to do something about that situation.
Great stuff. We've got another question from a parent, and this is from Paul O'Brien. When I talk to other parents at the school about their children's sleep, I'm constantly told how their child, aged 5 to 6 roughly, sleeps for approximately 11 to 12 hours per night. In fact, one of my son's best friends has woken every weekday morning at 8 has to be woken every weekday morning at 8 o'clock in time for school. This is unfortunately something we can only dream about with our son. From a very early age, we've had sleep problems with him. Regularly in the night, he's been up regularly in the night, wanting to be in our bed in the night, also wanting to my wife or I to be in his room when he goes to sleep. I thought this behaviour was normal for his age, roughly from 2 to 4. But as he's got older, we still have issues over his sleep. Practically every morning, Samuel wakes up at 5:30, regardless of the time we've put him to sleep. At times, he has had very late nights for various reasons, and he will still wake up at 5:30. Put to bed around 6:30 in the evening, he will sleep till approximately 5:30 a.m. The problem we have is that Samuel can't handle less than 11 hours sleep, as this makes him irritable, tetchy and sensitive. More importantly, though, it seriously affects his concentration, which as a result will have a negative impact on his education. So what you've from what you've heard so far, Pam, what do you think?
Early waking is such a common problem, and it's often one that parents almost resign themselves to. But it doesn't have to be that way, is the key message. The reason that it happens is that at that stage of the night, we're all in a lot of light sleep. So the chances of a child waking completely are far higher than they would be at any other time of the night. But that doesn't mean that they don't actually need to go back to sleep and get more sleep at that point. To be honest, any wake-up time that starts with a 5 is too early in my book, and I think would be in the book of most parents, because we all need a bit more sleep than that. So the things that I would think about, Paul, would be, first of all, any environmental factors that might influence Samuel waking at this time. So firstly, light in the room. Obviously less of an issue at the moment, but we are coming into the spring, so get some blackout blinds. You don't want your child waking early in the summer because light is streaming in. Think about environmental noise, whether there's central heating that kicks in at that time. If that's a problem, put some white noise in the room to mask it, so that, and that needs to stay on all night so that your child isn't then woken by strange noises starting up or traffic noise or anything like that. The next thing I would think about, what actually happens when Samuel wakes up? Because an incentive to wake at that time can be a really, really strong drive for a child to wake. And by an incentive, it could be having some milk, getting up and having a snack or their breakfast. It could be being allowed to go and watch the TV. It could be being allowed to get up and play. It could even be attention from mum and dad. You need to understand if there's something that's giving your child an incentive to actually wake up fully as opposed to just drift back off to sleep again, and then work to eliminate that so that, you know, even if your child is awake a little bit earlier, they learn to just lie quietly in their bed and relax until an acceptable waking time, which I would say, you know, needs to be beyond six, really. So that's the next thing to think about. The problem is when a child regularly wakes and gets up at that time, their body clock becomes set for that point. So as we all know, you know, if you put your child to bed a bit later or a bit earlier, as Paul says, they will nearly always wake at the same time. That's why clock change is a nightmare as a parent, particularly the one in the autumn, because your child will carry on waking at the same time, even though the clock's saying that it's different. So the body clock gets set at that point, and that's quite difficult to shift. And then if you also have a child that's overtired, so it sounds like Samuel is staying up later because of homework and his after-school clubs and that kind of thing, the overtiredness will also be making him wake early as well. So I think moving the routine so that he's going to bed a little bit early will be helpful. And I would also say take the benefit of the upcoming clock change that's going in the opposite direction, so that you then keep him on a schedule where he's going down to sleep at 7:30 and he will almost certainly continue to wake at what is 6:30 in the new time, which will be much more acceptable for everyone, will mean he gets the 11 hours of sleep that he needs. And hopefully that will fit better around his extracurricular activities as well. I am a massive fan of the grow clock. I know Paul mentions it in his question that he put to us. The grow clock or a sleep clock of some kind is absolutely brilliant for a child this age. It gives them a very clear signal of when it's an acceptable time to get up and start the day, but it's only as effective as you make it. So you've got to be really clear about the rules and you've got to consistently enforce them. And with a 5 or 6 year old, you know, you can always find a way of incentivizing them to stay in bed until the clock changes. It's just about understanding the child and what will work for them.
Great. We've had a couple of other questions kind of on the 5:30 start. So I'm going to skip them. But like, is there ever an age when a 5:30 start is acceptable? I mean, outside infant times?
No, I don't think so. It's very common because of this light sleep. But what you actually want, and what ended up with my son, what you really want is the child to wake, and, you know, they might be awake for a period of time, but to go back to sleep. My 3-year-old just wakes up and has a little sing for 20 minutes and then goes back to sleep till 7 o'clock. You can't stop them waking at that time. But what you want to encourage them is to either lie quietly or just doze off again until a more acceptable time.
Great. And just as a follow up from that, Lindsay has sent in a question. How much daytime sleep should a 24-month-old have? If not woken, her son would sleep for 2 to 3 hours. If woken earlier, he's very hard to wake, very tired and a grumpy for at least an hour. But I think he's a 5:30 waker.
OK, that was interesting, because that was going to be my first question. A child of that age needs about 13 hours sleep in a 24-hour period. So what you would ideally have is a child that's having up to a couple of hours after lunch and is then having 11 hours at least overnight. Now, some children need more and rarely less than that, but some need a little bit more. So if he was having 3 hours in the day but still doing 12 hours at night, I'd say that's brilliant, that's absolutely fine. But he's an early waker, so it might be that it is actually stealing a little bit of his nighttime sleep by having that length of nap. But I would make the adjustment very gradually, because the body clock doesn't respond to, you know, you change the nap by an hour today and it lengthens nighttime sleep straight away. So I would reduce the nap by 10 to 15 minutes every few days, and gradually that should start to feed in to the nighttime sleep. But in the same way, she needs to think about exactly the same points that I made for Paul's question about an incentive to wake and about the environmental factors, and you know, resetting the body clock is tricky. So I would encourage all parents to use the upcoming clock change to their advantage if they're still having problems in a month's time.
Very, very good that we did the show now. I have a question from Helen. Please can you tell me about nightmares? My 4-year-old sometimes has nightmares, but the main problem, he's worried about having them. Sometimes he refuses to go back to sleep at night because he's worried that bad dreams will come true. I've tried to reassure him that they're not real, but
to him they are real. Also have tried to use various objects such as dream catchers to catch bad dreams, but none of this seems to work.
Yeah, it's very tricky. You know, a four-year-old, there's a lot going on in their brains. And, it's, you know, especially if there have been any big changes going on in terms of childcare or another sibling or, you know, anything going on in the background. It's absolutely worth giving some thought to what else is happening in the child's life to see if you can get some insights into any areas you may need to reassure them about. I would then say spend time talking about the nightmares during the daytime so that you can actually help the child to understand, talk a little bit about what they're, you know, whether that ties into some of their fears, and so you can give them some reassurance about that. And also giving them plenty of time and your attention in the day can be helpful as well, because if it is due to some insecurities, then that's always a good idea. But I would always do all of that in the daytime, because during the night you don't want to get into an in-depth conversation about the nightmare in the middle of the night when the child's already frightened. So I would do that in the daytime. Other things that I would think about doing, she says she's tried a few things in terms of dream catchers, but I would also think about comfort objects as well. So if they haven't already got, you know, a favourite soft toy, I would introduce something like that. Or even maybe a t-shirt or something that smells of mum or dad, because children have very sensitive senses of smell, and sometimes if you give a child something that you've already worn and therefore it smells of you a little bit, you can say to them, in the night, if you're a bit frightened, give this a cuddle and it will make you feel better. So give them a technique, give them something to do, or you can come up with a little song for them, like a little lullaby for them to sing, that will almost distract them in the night when they're feeling a little bit frightened. Then they can sing that song, and if it's a bit repetitive, that might help them calm themselves down and get back off to sleep again. The things that I try, she mentioned dream catchers. The things that I try typically, which boys tend to love, is a monster spray, which is a plant spray full of water. So the last thing you do at night is the child sprays the monster spray round.
Yeah.
And that gets rid of everything. Or talk about the sleep fairy. Or if they're nervous because of the dark, then a grow clock, some, or a sleep clock of some kind, which they generally have a nice character face on. So you can then talk about that character watching over you, watching over the child whilst they're asleep at night, which again can give a bit of comfort. So there's a range of techniques, but you know, broadly, if there's underlying issues, try and deal with it in the daytime, and at night, just try different techniques that might help the child learn to calm themselves and relax and not panic about it.
Great stuff, Pam. Now, I'm afraid we're running out of time, and I really want to get a chance to speak to Jo Swindells, our local mum, who's sitting in the studio with us now. Jo, can you grab the microphone and tell us about your experience?
My elder daughter, who's nearly four now, has never been a very good sleeper, and from birth to around 14 months didn't sleep through. And looking back now, knowing what I know now, I realise it's because we always fed her to sleep, or held her to sleep, or as she got older, laid on the floor holding her to go to sleep, and then we would crawl out of the room commando style after she fell asleep. So as not to wake her. I mean, looking back, it was crazy. We've done none of this with our second child at all, and we've not had any of these same kind of problems. Our elder daughter is, I would say, a much more strong-willed personality, and I think because we thought that about her, that's some of the reasons why we thought that her behaviour was normal, and that the sleeping was normal. So she slept through from around 14 months to 2.5. And at 2.5, we took her out of a cot and put her in a bed. And from then, she never slept through. So she would, again, we were still staying with her. And we were reading her to sleep. So we would read her stories so she fell asleep. And then we would sneak out of the room. And then she started waking in the night. And it would be about 3 or 4 times a night. So from 2.5, and she's 4 next month, she was waking up about 3 or 4 times a night, and her sleep prop was us. Oh. So and primarily me. She would always want mum rather than dad. We just thought that was what we had to cope with. So we were going into a room, we did things like we bought a camping mat that we kept under her bed, which we would roll out.
More sleeping pills.
And we had a pillow, and we even put a duvet in there when winter came. So it was like we were sort of bedding in and thinking this was normal. And then at some point, after she'd fallen asleep, we would sort of shake ourselves awake and stagger back to bed. And then we started tag teaming it, so one of us would sleep in the loft to get a proper night's sleep, so me and my husband weren't sharing a bed anymore. And then eventually last September we were so tired, so a year later, and so worn down that we started letting her come in our bed. So instead of moving forward, we were actually going backwards then. And it coincided with my daughter starting nursery, so she was more tired anywhere in the day and quite crotchety. She'd get to the point where she didn't know what to do with herself. She was so tired and quite a lot of tantrums, lots of things that the other people have talked about. So when it got to December of last year, we were really at the end of our tether and we started looking for outside help. And we came across a recommendation for Pam through the Raring to Go magazine. And neither of us were believed that anything would change. But I was really desperate to try it by this point. So Pam came to see us and we had a consultation for about an hour and a half and talked through all the things about my daughter's pattern of sleeping and what happened. She went to bed. One of the things we discovered very quickly was that her room was far too hot. Our airing cupboard's in her bedroom, and when we put a thermometer in the bedroom, it was 26 degrees in her bedroom. And she used to be quite sweaty, and we never thought anything of it. We just thought she was one of those kind of hot children. So Pam recommended the room should really be about 18 or 19 degrees. So we cranked open the window, even though it was winter. And then we got a programme to try, and we decided that on New Year's Day, symbolic New Year's Day,
new start,
we would try the program. And it involved the main thing was that was really interesting was we didn't even think about getting our daughter on board with the program. I think because it had been going on so long in our head, she was still a 2 year old who didn't sleep properly rather than an almost 4 year old who didn't sleep properly. So we talked to her about it, and Pam met her, and she talked to Pam about who was the sleep lady, and we really engaged her with it, and there was a big reward at the end, which was going to be a new bed, which she needed anyway, because she was growing out of her own bed, and lots of little rewards along the way. What was interesting is lots of the things that we talked about for the strategy, for the plan, we tried before, but really half-heartedly. Because we didn't in our hearts believe that anything would ever change. We thought at some point in the dim and distant future she would grow out of it. And I have to say that the change has been absolutely staggering. It took a week to go from a waking up three...
A week
to go from a waking up three or four times a night, every night, to going to bed by herself with us not in the room after a gradual withdrawal over the week. To her sleeping through the night and waking up with the grow clock. And we started off with the grow clock at 6, and then we keep sneaking it forward, and we're now up to 10 to 7. And it's absolutely staggering. I would not have believed, if anybody was telling me this story, how incredibly well the whole programme came together. And after about a week, we filled in one reward chart, and after a week she said, "Mummy, I'm a big girl, I don't need a reward chart. I can sleep in my own bed by myself."
It's a miracle.
So it feels like a miracle. It absolutely feels like a miracle.
Yeah, and to have your life back and the quality of life.
And just to feel normal again, to feel like we were actually frightened of our own child. It sounds ridiculous. And the really crazy thing is that with our second daughter, who's 20 months, we've done none of this.
Yeah.
Because we knew in our heart of hearts that we'd got ourselves into such ridiculously bad habits. So with our second daughter, we do bedtime routine, stories, good lighting, etc. And she goes in the cot, and if she grizzles for 10 minutes, then she grizzles for 10 minutes, and then she falls asleep, and she sleeps through, and she's slept through for about 12 months. So she was sleeping through far before our elder daughter was sleeping through.
It's amazing, isn't it? So, there's so many positive things in what you've said, Jo. Get help,
don't put up with the situation if it's making your life a misery. Like, there, you can change situations. That's what you're saying. You can change it.
And I think it's don't be frightened. They are only a small child. You know, we were frightened. We were both. I mean, New Year's Day. Right, come on then. We've got to do this. We were frightened of what, I don't know what we thought might happen as a consequence. But and all the little things that you know you're supposed to do, but you have to do it properly. You have to really commit to it.
But I guess if it's been going on for so long, it's hard to believe that the change could happen.
You're just worn down. Ladies, I'm so sorry. We've run out of time. It's been fantastic. Pam Clark, thank you so much for joining us.
You're from the
Child Sleep Company. Your link will be on our Facebook page. Obviously, Joe Swindell, thanks a million. Georgie, we're going to talk to Claire Healy quickly because it's coming up to midterm and we need her advice about what to do with our kids. Just a second. Welcome back to the Parents Show on Radio Verulam 92.6 FM. Now it's that time of the evening. Midterms coming up, Claire. What are we going to do?
It's a really strange one, isn't it? Because it's kind of like almost Easter, but it is half term. So it's a really, really strange one. But of course, it's all indoor stuff, isn't it? It's half term. It's February. So it's all going to be indoor. Apart from, of course, Willow's Farm, who are doing their February frolics. And you go down there, learn all about lambs, see new little lambs being born. They've got lamb cam down there, which we're going to link up to our website. So you can go and see all the lambs. And it's fantastic. I mean, they've got their indoor play barn. If it's wet down there, it's just a great place to go at any time of year, really. So I will quickly, I'm aware I've got about 2 minutes, haven't I?
I'm really sorry.
Let's have a quick summary. Let's have a quick summary of what's going on, because you can see all of these on the Raring to Go website. So if you are interested, you can go there and have a look. There are holiday clubs going on all over the place. The prime one, I suppose, in the local area is, not so much a holiday club, holiday activities at the Museum of St. Albans. They've got a week of silly words and serious objects, basically every day between Monday and Friday, 10:30 till 12:30. They've got various different types of words. On Monday, it's Egyptian words, Tuesday, Roman words, etc. It's £5 per child per day, or you can pay £20 and the child can go for the week. Also, up in Stockwood Park, which I mention quite a lot, it's one of my favourite museums because I really like it out there. Up in Luton, Stockwood Park Museum, they've got activities going on all week. And I remember writing them down and I've lost them on my sheet of paper.
Too many things for us to do.
There are too many things. They have got some activities going on. Here we are. Holiday Club activities, £25 per day. It's 9 till 4, so you can put your children in the holiday club. They'll be doing various different things during the day, every day. So it's £25, 9 o'clock till 4 o'clock up in Stockwood Park Discovery Centre. And it's for children aged 8 to 10 years. There is a big party going on at Big Space on Wednesday. It's a pirate party, so you need to dress up, 4 till 6, and the doors open at 3. And it's half price entry with your £3 ticket. And you need to wear fancy dress, goodie bag for every child, and there's a children's entertainer. Just sounds like it's going to be a really good, good afternoon with a bit of activity down at Big Space in Harpenden. Where else have we got? On Thursday morning, there is a free family discovery morning at the cathedral. Now, these ones, they run these quite regularly. It's a sort of trail and fun craft activity throughout the museum. The theme is paws and claws, so it's animals big and small in the most unusual places around the cathedral. It's suitable for ages 3 to 11, and children need to be accompanied by an adult. How are we doing for time?
You've got about 15 seconds.
15 seconds. Well, I think, should we say very, very quickly, there are activities going on at the Paper Trail in Apsley, which might be worth a look. Have a look on our website. All the details are on there.